mouthful of blood at the boy's feet. "What happened to your hair?"
"I cut it off, brother," said Egg. "I didn't want to look like you."
When he opened them again, half the wedding guests were on their feet and shouting, "Bed them! Bed them!" They were making such an uproar that they woke Dunk from a pleasant dream involving Tansel Tootall and the Red Widow. "Bed them! Bed them!" the calls rang out. Dunk sat up and rubbed his eyes. Sir Franklin Frey had the bride in his arms and was carrying her down the aisle, with men and boys swarming all around him. The ladies at the high table had surrounded Lord Butterwell. Lady Verwell had recovered from her grief and was trying to pull his lordship from his chair, while one of his daughters unlaced his boots and some Frey woman pulled up his tunic. Butterwell was flailing at them ineffectually and laughing. He was drunk, Dunk saw, and Sir Franklin was a deal drunker. So drunk he almost dropped the bride. Before Dunk quite realized what was happening, John the Fiddler had dragged him to his feet. "Here!" he cried out. "Let the giant carry her!" The next thing he knew, he was climbing a tower stair with the bride squirming in his arms. How he kept his feet was beyond him. The girl would not be still, and the men were all around them, making ribald japes about flowering her up and kneading her well, whilst they pulled off her clothes. The dwarfs joined in as well. They swarmed around Dunk's legs, shouting and laughing and smacking at his calves with their bladders. It was all he could do not to trip over them. Dunk had no notion where Lord Butterwell's bedchamber was to be found, but the other men pushed and prodded him until he got there, by which time the bride was red-faced, giggling, and nearly naked, save for the stocking on her left leg, which had somehow survived the climb. Dunk was crimson, too, and not from exertion. His arousal would have been obvious if anyone had been looking, but fortunately all eyes were on the bride. Lady Butterwell looked nothing like Tansel, but having the one squirming half-naked in his arms had started Dunk thinking about the other. Tansel Tootall, that was her name, but she was not too tall for me. He wondered if he would ever find her again. There had been some nights when he thought he must have dreamed her. "No, Lunk, you only dreamed she liked you." Lord Butterwell's bedchamber was large and lavish once he found it. Mirish carpets covered the floors, 100 scented candles burned in nooks and crannies, and a suit of plate inlaid with gold and gems stood beside the door. It even had its own privy set into a small stone alcove in the outer wall. When Dunk finally plopped the bride onto her marriage bed, a dwarf leapt in beside her and seized one of her breasts for a bit of a fondle. The girl let out a squeal. The men roared with laughter, and Dunk seized the dwarf by his collar and hauled him kicking off Milady. He was carrying the little man across the room to chuck him out the door when he saw the dragon's egg. Lord Butterwell had placed it on a black velvet cushion atop a marble plinth. It was much bigger than a hen's egg, though not so big as he'd imagined. Fine red scales covered its surface, shining bright as jewels by the light of lamps and candles. Dunk dropped the dwarf and picked up the egg, just to feel it for a moment. It was heavier than he'd expected. You could smash a man's head with this and never crack the shell. The scales were smooth beneath his fingers, and the deep, rich red seemed to shimmer as he turned the egg in his hands. Blood and flame, he thought. But there were gold flecks in it as well, and whorls of midnight black.
"Here, you! What do you think you're doing, sir?"
A knight he did not know was glaring at him, a big man with a coal-black beard and boils. But it was the voice that made him blink, a deep voice, thick with anger. It was him, the man with peak, Dunk realized as the man said,
"Put that down. I'll thank you to keep your greasy fingers off his lordship's treasures, or by the seven you shall wish you had."
The other knight was not near so drunk as Dunk, so it seemed wise to do as he said. He put the egg back on its pillow very carefully and wiped his fingers on his sleeve.
I meant no harm, sir.
Dunk the lunk, thick as a castle wall. Then he shoved past the man with the black beard and out the door. There were noises in the stairwell, glad shouts and girlish laughter. The women were bringing Lord Butterwell to his bride. Dunk had no wish to encounter them, so he went up instead of down, and found himself on the tower roof beneath the stars, with the pale castle glimmering in the moonlight all around him. He was feeling dizzy from the wine, so he leaned against a parapet.
Am I going to be sick?
Why did he go and touch the dragon's egg? He remembered Tansel's puppet show and the wooden dragon that had started all the trouble there at Ashford. The memory made Dunk feel guilty, as it always did. 3 good men dead to save a hedge knight's foot. It made no sense and never had.
Take a lesson from that, Lunk. It is not for the likes of you to mess about with dragons or their eggs.
It almost looks as if it's made of snow. Dunk turned. John the Fiddler stood behind him, smiling in his silk and cloth of gold.
What's made of snow?
The castle. All that white stone in the moonlight. Have you ever been north of the Neck, Sir Duncan? I'm told it snows there even in the summer. Have you ever seen the wall?
No, my lord.
Why is he going on about the wall?
That's where we were going, Egg and me, up north, to Winterfell.
Would that I could join you. You could show me the way.
The way?
Dunk frowned.
It's right up the King's Road. If you stay to the road and keep going north, you can't miss it.
The fiddler laughed. I suppose not, though you might be surprised at what some men can miss. He went to the parapet and looked out across the castle. They say those Northmen are savage folk, and their woods are full of wolves.
My lord, why did you come up here?
Alan was seeking for me, and I did not care to be found. He grows tiresome when he drinks, does Alan? I saw you slip away from that bedchamber of horrors and slipped out after you. I've had too much wine, I grant you, but not enough to face a naked Butterwell. He gave Dunk an enigmatic smile. I dreamed of you, Sir Duncan, before I even met you. When I saw you on the road, I knew your face at once. It was as if we were old friends. Dunk had the strangest feeling then, as if he had lived this all before. I dreamed of you, he said. My dreams are not like yours, Sir Duncan. Mine are true.
You dreamed of me? He said, in a voice made thick by wine.
What sort of dream? Why, the fiddler said, I dreamed that you were all in white from head to heel, with a long pale cloak flowing from those broad shoulders. You were a white sword, sir, a sworn brother of the King's Guard, the greatest knight in all the 7 kingdoms. And you lived for no other purpose but to guard and serve and please your king. He put a hand on Dunk's shoulder. You have dreamed the same dream, I know you have. He had. It was true. The first time the old man let me hold his sword.
Every boy dreams of serving in the King's Guard.
Only 7 boys grow up to wear the white cloak, though. Would it please you to be one of them?
Me?
Dunk shrugged away the lordling's hand, which had begun to knead his shoulder.
It might, or not.
The knights of the King's Guard served for life and swore to take no wife and hold no lands. I might find Tansel again someday. Why shouldn't I have a wife and sons?
It makes no matter what I dream. Only a king can make a King's Guard knight.
I suppose that means I'll have to take the throne, then. I would much rather be teaching you to fiddle.
You're drunk, and the crow once called the raven black.
Wonderfully drunk. Wine makes all things possible, Sir Duncan. You'd look a god in white, I think. But if the color does not suit you, perhaps you would prefer to be a lord. Dunk laughed in his face.
No, I'd sooner sprout big blue wings and fly. One's as likely as the other.
Now you mock me. A true knight would never mock his king. The fiddler sounded hurt. I hope you will put more faith in what I tell you when you see the dragon hatch.
A dragon will hatch? A living dragon? What, here?
I dreamed it. This pale white castle? You? A dragon bursting from an egg? I dreamed it all, just as I once dreamed of my brothers lying dead. They were 12, and I was only 7, so they laughed at me and died. I am 22 now, and I trust my dreams.
Dunk was remembering another tourney, remembering how he had walked through the soft spring rains with another princeling.
I dreamed of you and a dead dragon, Egg's brother Dayron said to him. A great beast, huge, with wings so large they could cover this meadow. It had fallen on top of you, but you were alive and the dragon was dead.
And so was he, poor Baelor. Dreams were a treacherous ground on which to build.
As you say, my lord, he told the fiddler. Pray excuse me.
Where are you going, sir?
To my bed, to sleep. I'm drunk as a dog.
Be my dog, sir. The night's alive with promise. We can howl together and wake the very gods.
What do you want of me?
Your sword. I would make you mine own man and raise you high. My dreams do not lie, Sir Duncan. You will have that white cloak, and I must have the dragon's egg. I must. My dreams have made that plain. Perhaps the egg will hatch, or else...
Behind them, the door banged open violently.
There he is, my lord!
A pair of men-at-arms stepped onto the roof. Lord Gorman Peake was just behind them.
Gormy! The fiddler drawled. Why, what are you doing in my bedchamber, my lord?
It is a roof, sir, and you have had too much wine.
Lord Gorman made a sharp gesture, and the guards moved forward.
Allow us to help you to that bed. You are jousting on the morrow, pray recall. Kirby Pym can prove a dangerous foe. I had hoped to joust with good Sir Duncan here.
Peake gave Dunk an unsympathetic look.
Later, perhaps. For your first tilt, you have drawn Sir Kirby Pym. Then Pym must fall. So must they all. The mystery knight prevails against all challengers, and wonder dances in his wake.
A guardsman took the fiddler by the arm.
Sir Duncan, it seems that we must part, he called as they helped him down the steps.
Only Lord Gorman remained upon the roof with Dunk.
Hedge knight, he growled. Did your mother never teach you not to reach your hand into the dragon's mouth?
I never knew my mother, my lord.
That would explain it. What did he promise you?
A lordship, a white cloak, big blue wings.
Here's my promise. 3 feet of cold steel through your belly if you speak a word of what just happened.
Dunk shook his head to clear his wits. It did not seem to help. He bent double at the waist and retched. Some of the vomit spattered Peake's boots.
The lord cursed. Hedge knights, he exclaimed in disgust. You have no place here. No true knight would be so discourteous as to turn up uninvited. But you creatures of the hedge...
We are wanted nowhere and turn up everywhere, my lord.
The wine had made Dunk bold, else he would have held his tongue. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Try and remember what I told you, sir. It will go ill for you if you do not. Lord Peak shook the vomit off his boot. Then he was gone. Dunk leaned against the parapet again. He wondered who was madder, Lord Gorman or the fiddler. By the time he found his way back to the hall, only Maynard Plum remained of his companions. "Was there any flour on her teats when you got the small clothes offer?" he wanted to know. Dunk shook his head, poured himself another cup of wine, tasted it, and decided that he had drunk enough. Butterwell's stewards had found rooms in the keep for the lords and ladies, and beds in the barracks for their retinues. The rest of the guests had their choice between a straw pallet in the cellar or a spot of ground beneath the western walls to raise their pavilions. The modest sailcloth tent Dunk had acquired in Stony Sept was no pavilion, but it kept the rain and sun off. Some of his neighbors were still awake, the silken walls of their pavilions glowing like colored lanterns in the night. Laughter came from inside a blue pavilion covered with sunflowers, and the sounds of love from one striped in white and purple. Egg had set up their own tent a bit apart from the others. Maester and the two horses were hobbled nearby, and Dunk's arms and armor had been neatly stacked against the castle walls. When he crept into the tent, he found his squire sitting cross-legged by a candle, his head shining as he peered over a book. "Reading books by candlelight will make you blind." Reading remained a mystery to Dunk, though the lad had tried to teach him.
"I need the candlelight to see the words, sir."
"Do you want a clout in the ear? What book is that?"
Dunk saw bright colors on the page, little painted shields hiding in amongst the letters.
"A roll of arms, sir."
"Looking for the fiddler? You won't find him. They don't put hedge knights in those rolls, just lords and champions."
"I wasn't looking for him. I saw some other sigils in the yard. Lord Sunderland is here, sir. He bears the heads of three pale ladies on undy green and blue."
"A sister man? Truly?"
The three sisters were islands in the Bight. Dunk had heard Septons say that the isles were sinks of sin and avarice. Sisterton was the most notorious smuggler's den in all of Westeros.
"He comes a long way. He must be kin to Butterwell's new bride."
"He isn't, sir."
"Then he's here for the feast. They eat fish on the Three Sisters, don't they? A man gets sick of fish."
"Did you get enough to eat? I brought you half a capon and some cheese."
Dunk rummaged in the pocket of his cloak.
"They fed us ribs, sir."
Egg's nose was deep in the book.
"Lord Sunderland fought for the Black Dragon, sir."
"Like old Sir Eustace? He wasn't so bad, was he?"
"No, sir," Egg said, "but..."
"I saw the dragon's egg."
Dunk squirreled the food away with their hard bread and salt beef.
"It was red, mostly. Does Lord Bloodraven own a dragon's egg as well?"
Egg lowered his book.
"Why would he? He's baseborn."
"Bastardborn, not baseborn."
Bloodraven had been born on the wrong side of the blanket, but he was noble on both sides. Dunk was about to tell Egg about the men he'd overheard when he noticed his face.
"What happened to your lip?"
"A fight, sir."
"Let me see it."
"It only bled a little. I dabbed some wine on it."
"Who were you fighting?"
"Some other squires. They said..."
"Never mind what they said. What did I tell you?"
"To hold my tongue and make no trouble."
The boy touched his broken lip.
"They called my father a kinslayer, though."
"He is, lad, though I do not think he meant it."
Dunk had told Egg 100 times not to take such words to heart.
"You know the truth. Let that be enough."
They had heard such talk before, in wine sinks and low taverns and around campfires in the woods. The whole realm knew how Prince Maekar's mace had felled his brother Baelor Breakspear at Ashford Meadow. Talk of plots was only to be expected.
"If they knew Prince Maekar was your father, they would never have said such things."
"Behind your back, yes, but never to your face. And what did you tell these other squires instead of holding your tongue?
Egg looked abashed. That Prince Balor's death was just a mishap. Only when I said Prince Makar loved his brother Balor, Ser Adam's squire said he loved him to death, and Ser Malor's squire said he meant to love his brother Ares the same way. That was when I hit him. I hit him good.
I ought to hit you good. A fat ear to go with that fat lip. Your father would do the same if he were here.
Do you think Prince Makar needs a little boy to defend him?
What did he tell you when he sent you off with me?
To serve you faithfully as your squire, and not flinch from any task or hardship.
And what else?
To obey the king's laws, the rules of chivalry, and you.
And what else?
To keep my hair shaved or dyed?
The boy said with obvious reluctance.
And tell no man my true name.
Dunk nodded. How much wine had this boy drunk?
He was drinking barley beer.
You see? The barley beer was talking. Words are wind, Egg. Just let them blow on past you.
Some words are wind.
The boy was nothing if not stubborn.
Some words are treason. This is a traitor's tourney, sir.
What, all of them? Dunk shook his head. If it was true, that was a long time ago. The Black Dragon's dead, and those who fought with him are fled or pardoned. And it's not true. Lord Butterwell's sons fought on both sides.
That makes him half a traitor, sir.
16 years ago. Dunk's mellow, whiny haze was gone. He felt angry and near sober. Lord Butterwell's steward is the master of the games, a man named Cosgrove. Find him, and enter my name for the lists. No, wait. Hold back my name. With so many lords on hand, one of them might recall Ser Duncan the Tall from Ashford Meadow. Enter me as the Gallows Knight. The small folk loved it when a mystery knight appeared at a tourney.
Egg fingered his fat lip. The Gallows Knight, sir?
For the shield.
Yes, but...
Go do as I said. You have read enough for one night. Dunk pinched the candle out between his thumb and forefinger.
Egg was up and gone when Dunk awoke, with the light of the morning sun in his face. Gods be good, how can it be so hot so soon? He sat up and stretched, yawning, then climbed to his feet and stumbled sleepily down to the well, where he lit a fat tallow candle, splashed some cold water on his face, and dressed. When he stepped out into the sunlight, Thunder was waiting by the stable, saddled and bridled. Egg was waiting too, with Maester, his mule. The boy had put his boots on. For once he looked a proper squire, in a handsome doublet of green and gold checks and a pair of tight white woollen breeches. The breeches were torn in the seat, but Sam Stoop's wife sewed them up for me, he announced. The clothes were Adam's, said Sir Eustace, as he led his own grey gelding from his stall. A checky lion adorned the frayed silk cloak that flowed from the old man's shoulders. The doublet is a trifle musty from the trunk, but it should serve. A knight is more impressive with a squire in attendance, so I have decided that Egg should accompany you to Coldmoat. Outwitted by a boy of 10, Dunk looked at Egg and silently mouthed the words clout in the ear. The boy grinned. I have something for you as well, Sir Duncan. Come. Sir Eustace produced a cloak and shook it out with a flourish. It was white wool, bordered with squares of green satin and cloth of gold. A woolen cloak was the last thing he needed in such heat, but when Sir Eustace draped it about his shoulders, Dunk saw the pride on his face and found himself unable to refuse. Thank you, my lord. It suits you well. Would that I could give you more. The old man's moustache twitched. I sent Sam Stoops down into the cellar to search through my son's things, but Edwin and Harold were smaller men, thinner in the chest and much shorter in the leg. None of what they left would fit you, sad to say. The cloak is enough, my lord. I won't shame it. I do not doubt that. He gave his horse a pat. I thought I'd ride with you part of the way, if you have no objection. None, my lord. Egg led them down the hill, sitting tall on Maester. Must he wear that floppy straw hat? Sir Eustace asked Dunk. He looks a bit foolish, don't you think? Not so foolish as when his head is peeling, my lord. Even at this hour, with the sun barely above the horizon, it was hot. By afternoon, the saddles will be hot enough to raise blisters. Egg might look elegant in the dead boy's finery, but he would be a boiled egg by nightfall. Dunk, at least, could change. He had his good tunic in his saddlebag, and his old green one on his back. "We'll take the west way," Sir Eustace announced. "It is little used these past years, but still the shortest way from Standfast to Coldmoat Castle." The path took them around back of the hill, past the graves where the old knight had laid his wife and sons to rest in a thicket of blackberry bushes. "They loved to pick the berries here, my boys. When they were little, they would come to me with sticky faces and scratches on their arms, and I'd know just where they'd been." He smiled fondly. "Your egg reminds me of my Adam. A brave boy for one so young. Adam was trying to protect his wounded brother Harold when the battle washed over them. A riverman with 6 acorns on his shield took his arm off with an axe." His sad grey eyes found Dunk's. "This old master of yours, the Knight of Penny Tree, did he fight in the Blackfyre Rebellion?"
"He did, my lord, before he took me on."
Dunk had been no more than 3 or 4 at the time, running half naked through the alleys of Flea Bottom, more animal than boy.
"Was he for the Red Dragon or the Black?"
Red or black was a dangerous question, even now. Since the days of Aegon the Conqueror, the arms of House Targaryen had borne a 3-headed dragon, red on black. Daemon the Pretender had reversed those colours on his own banners, as many bastards did. "Sir Eustace is my liege lord," Dunk reminded himself. "He has a right to ask." "He fought beneath Lord Hayford's banner, my lord."
"Green fretty over gold? A green pale wavy?"
"It might be, my lord. Egg would know." The lad could recite the arms of half the knights in Westeros.
"Lord Hayford was a noted loyalist. King Darren made him his hand just before the battle. Butterwell had done such a dismal job that many questioned his loyalty, but Lord Hayford had been stalwart from the first.
Sir Arlen was beside him when he fell. A lord with 3 castles on his shield cut him down.
Many good men fell that day, on both sides. The grass was not red before the battle. Did your Sir Arlen tell you that?"
"Sir Arlen never liked to speak about the battle. His squire died there too. Roger of Pennytree was his name, Sir Arlen's sister's son." Even saying the name made Dunk feel vaguely guilty. "I stole his place. Only princes and great lords had the means to keep 2 squires. If Aegon the Unworthy had given his sword to his heir, Daeron, instead of his bastard Daemon, there might never have been a Blackfyre Rebellion, and Roger of Pennytree might be alive today. He would be a knight someplace, a truer knight than me. I would have ended on the gallows, or been sent off to the Night's Watch to walk the wall until I died."
"A great battle is a terrible thing," the old knight said, "but in the midst of blood and carnage there is sometimes also beauty. Beauty that could break your heart. I will never forget the way the sun looked when it set upon the red grass field. 10,000 men had died, and the air was thick with moans and lamentations, but above us the sky turned gold and red and orange, so beautiful it made me weep to know that my sons would never see it." He sighed. "It was a closer thing than they would have you believe these days, if not for Blood Raven."
"I'd always heard that it was Baylor Breakspear who won the battle," said Dunk. "Him and Prince Maker."
"The hammer and the anvil."
The old man's moustache gave a twitch.
"The singers leave out much and more. Daemon was the warrior himself that day. No man could stand before him. He broke Lord Aerin's van to pieces and slew the Knight of 9 Stars and Wild Will Wainwood before coming up against Sir Gawain Corbray of the King's Guard. For near an hour they danced together on their horses, wheeling and circling and slashing as men died all around them. It said that whenever Blackfyre and Lady Forlorn clashed, you could hear the sound for a league around. It was half a song and half a scream, they say. But when at last the lady faltered, Blackfyre clove through Sir Gawain's helm and left him blind and bleeding. Daemon dismounted to see that his fallen foe was not trampled, and commanded Red Tusk to carry him back to the maesters in the rear. And there was his mortal error, for the raven's teeth had gained the top of Weeping Ridge, and Bloodraven saw half his brother's royal standard 300 yards away, and Daemon and his sons beneath it. He slew Aegon first, the elder of the twins, for he knew that Daemon would never leave the boy whilst warmth lingered in his body, though white shafts fell like rain. Nor did he, though 7 arrows pierced him, driven as much by sorcery as by Bloodraven's bow. Young Aemon took up Blackfyre when the blade slipped from his dying father's fingers, so Bloodraven slew him too, the younger of the twins. Thus perished the Black Dragon and his sons. There was much and more afterward, I know. I saw a bit of it myself, the rebels running, Bitter Steel turning the rout and leading his mad charge, his battle with Bloodraven second only to the one Daemon fought with Gawain Corbray. Prince Baylor's hammer blow against the rebel rear, the Dornish men all screaming as they filled the air with spears. But at the end of the day it made no matter. The war was done when Daemon died. So close a thing. If Daemon had ridden over Gawain Corbray and left him to his fate, he might have broken Maekar's left before Bloodraven could take the ridge. The day would have belonged to the Black Dragons then, with the hand slain and the road to King's Landing open before them. Daemon might have been sitting on the Iron Throne by the time Prince Baylor could come up with his Storm Lords and his Dornish men. The singers can go on about their hammer and their anvil, sir, but it was the Kinslayer who turned the tide with a white arrow and a black spell. He rules us now as well, make no mistake. King Aerys is his creature. It would not surprise to learn that Bloodraven had ensorcelled his grace to bend him to his will. Small wonder we are cursed. Sir Eustace shook his head and lapsed into a brooding silence. Dunk wondered how much Egg had overheard, but there was no way to ask him. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have, he thought. Already the day was growing hotter. Even the flies have fled, Dunk noted. Flies have better sense than knights. They stay out of the sun. He wondered whether he and Egg would be offered hospitality at Cold Moat. A tankard of cool brown ale would go down well. Dunk was considering that prospect with pleasure when he remembered what Egg had said about the Red Widow poisoning her husbands. His thirst fled at once. There were worse things than dry throats. There was a time when House Osgray held all the lands for many leagues around, from Nunney in the east to Cobble Cover, Sir Eustace said. Cold Moat was ours, and the Horseshoe Hills, the caves at Dering Downs, the villages of Dosk and Little Dosk and Brandy Bottom, both sides of Leafy Lake. Osgray maids wed Florence, Swans and Tarbecks, even High Towers and Blackwoods. The edge of Watts Wood had come in sight. Dunk shielded his eyes with one hand and squinted at the greenery. For once he envied Egg his floppy hat. At least we'll have some shade. Watts Wood once extended all the way to Cold Moat, Sir Eustace said. I do not recall who Watt was. Before the conquest, you could find aurochs in his wood, though, and great elks of 20 hands and more. There were more red deer than any man could take in a lifetime, for none but the king and the Checky Lion were allowed to hunt here. Even in my father's day, there were trees on both sides of the stream. But the spiders cleared the woods away to make pasture for their cows and sheep and horses. A thin finger of sweat crept down Dunk's chest. He found himself wishing devoutly that his liege lord would keep quiet. It is too hot for talk. It is too hot for riding. It is just too bloody hot. In the woods they came upon the carcass of a great brown tree cat crawling with maggots. Ew, Egg said, as he walked maester wide around it. That stinks worse than Sir Benis. Sir Eustace reined up. A tree cat? I had not known there were any left in this wood. I wonder what killed him. When no one answered, he said, I will turn back here. Just continue on the west way, and it will take you straight to Cold Moat. You have the coin? Dunk nodded. Good. Come home with my water, sir. The old knight trotted off back the way they'd come. When he was gone, Egg said, I thought how you should speak to Lady Webber, sir. You should win her to your side with gallant compliments. The boy looked as cool and crisp in his checky tunic as Sir Eustace had in his cloak. Am I the only one who sweats? Gallant compliments, Dunk echoed. What sort of gallant compliments? You know, sir, tell her how fair and beautiful she is. Dunk had doubts. She's outlived four husbands. She must be as old as Lady Vaith. If I say she's fair and beautiful when she's old and warty, she will take me for a liar. You just need to find something true to say about her. That's what my brother Darren does. Even ugly old whores can have nice hair or well-shaped ears, he says. Well-shaped ears? Dunk's doubts were growing. Or pretty eyes. Tell her that her gown brings out the colour of her eyes. The lad reflected for a moment. Unless she only has the one eye, like Lord Bloodraven. My lady, that gown brings out the colour of your eye. Dunk had heard knights and lordlings mouth such gallantries at other ladies. They never put it quite so boldly, though. Good lady, that gown is beautiful. It brings out the colour of both your lovely eyes. Some of the ladies had been old and scrawny, or fat and florid, or pox-scarred and homely, but all wore gowns and had two eyes, and, as Dunk recalled, they'd been well pleased by the flowery words. What a lovely gown, my lady! It brings out the lovely beauty of your beautiful coloured eyes. A hedge knight's life is simpler, Dunk said glumly. If I say the wrong thing, she's like to sew me in a sack of rocks and throw me in her moat. I doubt she'll have that bigger sack, sir, said Egg. We could use my boot instead. No, Dunk growled, we couldn't. When they emerged from Watts Wood, they found themselves well upstream of the dam. The waters had risen high enough for Dunk to take that soak he dreamed of. Deep enough to drown a man, he thought. On the far side, the bank had been cut through, and a ditch dug to divert some of the flow westward. The ditch ran along the road, feeding a myriad of smaller channels that snaked off through the fields. Once we crossed the stream, we are in the widow's power. Dunk wondered what he was riding into. He was only one man, with a boy of 10 to guard his back. Egg fanned his face. Sir, why are we stopped?
We're not. Dunk gave his mount his heels and splashed down into the stream. Egg followed on the mule. The water rose as high as Thunder's belly before it began to fall again. They emerged, dripping on the widow's side. Ahead, the ditch ran straight as a spear, shining green and golden in the sun. When they spied the towers of Coldmoat several hours later, Dunk stopped to change to his good Dornish tunic and loosen his long sword in its scabbard. He did not want the blade sticking should he need to pull it free. Egg gave his dagger's hilt a shake as well, his face solemn beneath his floppy hat. They rode on side by side, Dunk on the big destrier, the boy upon his mule, the osgrey banner flapping listlessly from its staff. Coldmoat came as somewhat of a disappointment, after all that Sir Eustace had said of it. Compared to Storm's End, or Highgarden, and other lordly seats that Dunk had seen, it was a modest castle. But it was a castle, not a fortified watchtower. Its crenellated outer walls stood 30 feet high, with towers at each corner, each one half again the size of Standfast. From every turret and spire, the black banners of Webber hung heavy, each emblazoned with a spotted spider upon a silvery web.
Sir, Egg said, the water. Look where it goes.
The ditch ended under Coldmoat's eastern walls, spilling down into the moat from which the castle took its name. The gurgle of the falling water made Dunk grind his teeth. She will not have my checky water. Come, he said to Egg. Over the arch of the main gate, a row of spider banners drooped in the still air above the older sigil carved deep into the stone. Centuries of wind and weather had worn it down, but the shape of it was still distinct, a rampant lion made of checkered squares. The gates beneath were open. As they clattered across the drawbridge, Dunk made note of how low the moat had fallen. 6 feet, at least, he judged. Two spearmen barred their way at the portcullis. One had a big black beard, and one did not. The beard demanded to know their purpose here.
My Lord of Osgrey sent me to treat with Lady Webber, Dunk told him. I am called Sir Duncan the Tall.
Well, I knew you wasn't Bennis, said the beardless guard. We would have smelled him coming.
He had a missing tooth and a spotted spider badge sewn above his heart. The beard was squinting suspiciously at Dunk.
No one sees a ladyship unless the long inch gives his leave. You come with me. Your stable boy can stay with the horses.
I'm a squire, not a stable boy, Egg insisted. Are you blind or only stupid?
The beardless guard broke into laughter. The beard put the point of his spear to the boy's throat.
Say that again.
Dunk gave Egg a clout in the ear. No, shut your mouth and tend the horses. He dismounted. I'll see Sir Lucas now. The beard lowered his spear.
He's in the yard.
They passed beneath a spiked iron portcullis and under a murder hole before emerging in the outer ward. Hounds were barking in the kennels, and Dunk could hear singing coming from the leaded glass windows of a seven-sided wooden sept. In front of the smithy, a blacksmith was shoeing a warhorse, with a prentice boy assisting. Nearby, a squire was loosing shafts at the archery butts, while a freckled girl with a long braid matched him shot for shot. The quintain was spinning, too, as half a dozen knights in quilted padding took their turns knocking it around. They found Sir Lucas Longinch among the watchers at the quintain, speaking with a great fat septon who was sweating worse than Dunk, a round, white pudding of a man in robes as damp as if he'd worn them in his bath. Inchfield was a lance beside him, stiff and straight and very tall, though not so tall as Dunk. 6 feet and 7 inches, Dunk judged, and each inch prouder than the last. Though he wore black silk and cloth of silver, Sir Lucas looked as cool as if he were walking on the wall.
"My lord," the guard hailed him, "this one come from the Chicken Tower for an audience with her ladyship."
The septon turned first with a hoot of delight that made Dunk wonder if he were drunk.
"And what is this? A hedge knight? You have large hedges in the reach."
The septon made a sign of blessing.
"May the warrior fight ever at your side. I am Septon Sefton, an unfortunate name but mine own. And you?"
"Sir Duncan, the tall."
"A modest fellow, this one," the septon said to Sir Lucas. "Were I as large as him, I'd call myself Sir Sefton the Immense, Sir Sefton the Tower, Sir Sefton with the clouds about his ears."
His moon face was flushed, and there were wine stains on his robe. Sir Lucas studied Dunk. He was an older man, 40 at the least, perhaps as old as 50, sinewy rather than muscular, with a remarkably ugly face. His lips were thick, his teeth a yellow tangle, his nose broad and fleshy, his eyes protruding. And he is angry, Dunk sensed, even before the man said,
"Hedge knights are beggars with blades at best, outlaws at worst. Begone with you. We want none of your sort here."
Dunk's face darkened. "Sir Eustace Osgray sent me from Standfast to treat with the lady of the castle."
"Osgray?" The septon glanced at the Longinch. "Osgray of the Checky Lion? I thought House Osgray was extinguished."
"Near enough, as makes no matter. The old man is the last of them. We let him keep a crumbling tower house a few leagues east."
Sir Lucas frowned at Dunk.
"If Sir Eustace wants to talk with her ladyship, let him come himself."
His eyes narrowed.
"You were the one with Bennis at the dam. Don't trouble to deny it. I ought to hang you."
"Seven save us!"
The septon dabbed sweat from his brow with his sleeve.
"A brigand, is he? And a big one, sir. Repent your evil ways, and the mother will have mercy."
The septon's pious plea was undercut when he farted.
"Oh, dear. Forgive my wind, sir. That's what comes of beans and barley bread."
"I am not a brigand,"
Dunk told the two of them, with all the dignity that he could muster. The Longinch was unmoved by the denial.
"Do not presume upon my patience, sir, if you are a sir. Run back to your Chicken Tower and tell Sir Eustace to deliver up Sir Bennis Brownstench. If he spares us the trouble of winkling him out of Standfast, her ladyship may be more inclined to clemency."
"I will speak with her ladyship about Sir Bennis and the trouble at the dam, and about the stealing of our water, too."
"Stealing?" said Sir Lucas. "Say that to our lady, and you'll be swimming in a sack before the sun has set. Are you quite certain that you wish to see her?"
The only thing that Dunk was certain of was that he wanted to drive his fist through Lucas Inchfield's crooked yellow teeth.
"I've told you what I want." "Oh, let him speak with her," the septon urged. "What harm could it do? Sir Duncan has had a long ride beneath this beastly sun. Let the fellow have his say."
Sir Lucas studied Dunk again. "Our septon is a godly man. Come, I will thank you to be brief. He strode across the yard, and Dunk was forced to hurry after him. The doors of the castle Sept had opened, and worshippers were streaming down the steps. There were knights and squires, a dozen children, several old men, three Septers in white robes and hoods, and one soft, fleshy lady of high birth, garbed in a gown of dark blue damask, trimmed with Myrish lace, so long its hems were trailing in the dirt. Dunk judged her to be 40. Beneath a spun silver net, her auburn hair was piled high, but the reddest thing about her was her face. "My lady," Sir Lucas said, when they stood before her and her scepters, "this hedge knight claims to bring a message from Sir Eustace Oscray. Will you hear it?"
"If you wish it, Sir Lucas."
She peered at Dunk so hard that he could not help but recall Egg's talk of sorcery. "I don't think this one bathes in blood to keep her beauty." The widow was stout and square, with an oddly pointed head that her hair could not quite conceal. Her nose was too big and her mouth too small. She did have two eyes, he was relieved to see, but all thought of gallantry had abandoned Dunk by then. "Sir Eustace bid me talk with you concerning the recent trouble at your dam." She blinked.
"The dam, you say?"
A crowd was gathering about them. Dunk could feel unfriendly eyes upon him. "The stream," he said, "the Checky water. Your ladyship built a dam across it."
"Oh, I am quite sure I haven't," she replied. "Why, I have been at my devotions all morning, sir."
Dunk heard Sir Lucas chuckle. "I did not mean to say that your ladyship built the dam herself, only that without that water, all our crops will die. The small folk have beans and barley in the fields, and melons."
"Truly, I am very fond of melons."
Her small mouth made a happy bow.
"What sort of melons are they?"
Dunk glanced uneasily at the ring of faces and felt his own face growing hot. "Something is amiss here. The Long Inch is playing me for a fool. M'lady, could we continue our discussion in some more private place?"
"A silver says the great oath means to bedder,"
someone japed, and a roar of laughter went up all around him. The lady cringed away, half in terror, and raised both hands to shield her face. One of the scepters moved quickly to her side and put a protective arm around her shoulders.
"And what is all this merriment?"
The voice cut through the laughter, cool and firm.
"Will no one share the jape? Sir Knight, why are you troubling my good sister?"
It was the girl he had seen earlier at the archery butts. She had a quiver of arrows on one hip, and held a longbow that was just as tall as she was, which wasn't very tall. If Dunk was shy an inch of 7 feet, the archer was shy an inch of 5. He could have spanned her waist with his two hands. Her red hair was bound up in a braid so long it brushed past her thighs, and she had a dimpled chin, a snub nose, and a light spray of freckles across her cheeks.
"Forgive us, Lady Rohan."
The speaker was a pretty young lord with the Caswell centaur embroidered on his doublet.
"This great oaf took the Lady Hellicent for you."
Dunk looked from one lady to the other. "You are the Red Widow?" he heard himself blurt out.
"But you're too young."
The girl tossed her longbow to the lanky lad he'd seen her shooting with.
"I am 25, as it happens. Or was it small you meant to say?"
"Pretty. It was pretty." Dunk did not know where that came from, but he was glad it came. He liked her nose, and the strawberry blonde colour of her hair, and the small but well-shaped breasts beneath her leather jerkin.
"I thought that you'd be... I mean, they said you were 4 times a widow, so..."
"My first husband died when I was 10. He was 12, my father's squire, ridden down upon the red grass field. My husband seldom linger long, I fear. The last died in the spring."
That was what they always said of those who had perished during the great spring sickness 2 years past. He died in the spring. Many tens of thousands had died in the spring, among them a wise old king and 2 young princes full of promise.
I am sorry for all your losses, m'lady." "A gallantry, you lunk. Give her a gallantry."
"I want to say, your gown..."
"Gown?"
She glanced down at her boots and breeches, loose linen tunic and leather jerkin.
"I wear no gown."
"Your hair, I meant. It's soft and..."
"And how would you know that, sir? If you had ever touched my hair, I should think that I might remember."
"Not
soft, Dunk said miserably. Red, I meant to say. Your hair is very red.
Very red, sir? Oh, not as red as your face, I hope.
She laughed, and the onlookers laughed with her. All but Sir Lucas Longinch. My lady, he broke in, this man is one of Standfast's sellswords. He was with Bennis of the Brown Shield when he attacked your diggers at the dam and carved up Walmer's face. Old Osgray sent him to treat with you.
He did, my lady.
I am called Sir Duncan the Tall.
Sir Duncan the Dim, more like, said a bearded knight who wore the threefold thunderbolt of Laygood.
More guffaws sounded. Even Lady Hellicent had recovered herself enough to give a chuckle.
Did the courtesy of Coldmoat die with my lord father? The girl asked.
No, not a girl, a woman grown.
How did Sir Duncan come to make such an error, I wonder?
Dunk gave Inchfield an evil look. The fault was mine.
Was it?
The Red Widow looked Dunk over from his heels up to his head, though her gaze lingered longest on his chest. A tree and shooting star. I have never seen those arms before. She touched his tunic, tracing a limb of his elm tree with two fingers. And painted, not sewn. The Dornish paint their silks, I've heard, but you look too big to be a Dornishman.
Not all Dornishmen are small, m'lady.
Dunk could feel her fingers through the silk. Her hand was freckled, too. I'll bet she's freckled all over. His mouth was oddly dry.
I spent a year in Dorne.
Do all the oaks grow so tall there? She said, as her fingers traced a tree limb around his heart.
It's meant to be an elm, m'lady.
I shall remember. She drew her hand back, solemn. The ward is too hot and dusty for a conversation. Septon, show Sir Duncan to my audience chamber.
It would be my great pleasure, good sister.
Our guest will have a thirst. You may send for a flagon of wine as well.
Must I?
The fat man beamed.
Well, if it please you.
I will join you as soon as I have changed. Unhooking her belt and quiver, she handed them to her companion.
I'll want Maester Serric as well, Sir Lucas. Go ask him to attend me.
I will bring him at once, my lady, said Lucas the Longinch. The look she gave her castellan was cool.
No need. I know you have many duties to perform about the castle. It will suffice if you send Maester Serric to my chambers.
M'lady, Dunk called after her, my squire was made to wait by the gates. Might he join us as well?
Your squire? When she smiled, she looked a girl of 5 and 10, not a woman 5 and 20. A pretty girl, full of mischief and laughter.
If it please you, certainly.
Tyrion. He woke to the creak of old iron hinges.
Oh!
He croaked. At least he had his voice back, raw and hoarse though it was. The fever was still on him, and Tyrion had no notion of the hour. How long had he slept this time? He was so weak, so damnably weak.
Hoo!
He called again, more loudly. Torchlight spilled through the open door, but within the chamber the only light came from the stub of a candle beside his bed. When he saw a shape moving toward him, Tyrion shivered. Here in Maegor's Holdfast, every servant was in the Queen's pay, so any visitor might be another of Cersei's cat's paws, sent to finish the work Sir Mandon had begun. Then the man stepped into the candlelight, got a good look at the dwarf's pale face, and chortled.
Cut yourself shaving, did you?
Tyrion's fingers went to the great gash that ran from above one eye down to his jaw, across what remained of his nose. The proud flesh was still raw and warm to the touch.
With a fearful big razor, yes.
Bronze coal-black hair was freshly washed and brushed straight back from the hard lines of his face. He was dressed in high boots of soft tulle leather, a wide belt studded with nuggets of silver, and a cloak of pale green silk. Across the dark grey wool of his doublet, a burning chain was embroidered diagonally in bright green thread.
"Where have you been?"
Tyrion demanded of him.
"I sent for you. It must have been a fortnight ago." 4 days ago, more like, the sellsword said, and I've been here twice, and found you dead to the world. Not dead, though my sweet sister did try.
Perhaps he should not have said that aloud, but Tyrion was past caring. Cersei was behind Sir Manda's attempt to kill him. He knew that in his gut.
What's that ugly thing on your chest?
Bronn grinned.
My knightly sigil. A flaming chain, green, on a smoke-grey field. By your lord father's command, I'm Sir Bronn of the Blackwater now. Imp. See you don't forget it.
Tyrion put his hands on the feather bed and squirmed back a few inches against the pillows.
I was the one who promised you knighthood, remember?
He'd like that by your lord father's command, not at all. Lord Tywin had wasted little time. Moving his son from the Tower of the Hand to claim it for himself was a message anyone could read, and this was another.
I lose half my nose and you gain a knighthood. The guards have a deal to answer for.
His voice was sour.
Did my father dub you himself?
No, them of us as survived the fight at the Winch Towers got ourselves dabbed by the High Septon and dubbed by the King's Guard.
Took half the bloody day, with only three of the White Swords left to do the honours.
I knew Sir Mandan died in the battle,
shoved into the river by Pud, half a heartbeat before the treacherous bastard could drive his sword through my heart. Who else was lost?
The Hound, said Bronn. Not dead, only gone. The gold cloak say he turned craven, and you led a sortie in his place. Not one of my better notions. Tyrion could feel the scar tissue pull tight when he frowned. He waved Bronn toward a chair.
My sister's mistaken me for a mushroom. She keeps me in the dark and feeds me shit. Pud's a good lad, but the knot in his tongue is the size of Castle Rock, and I don't trust half of what he tells me. I sent him to bring Sir Jocelyn, and he came back and told me he's dead.
Him and thousands more, Bronn said.
How?
Tyrion demanded, feeling that much sicker.
During the battle. Your sister sent the Kettle Blacks to fetch the king back to the Red Keep, the way I hear it. When the gold cloaks saw him leaving, half of them decided they'd leave with him. Iron Hand put himself in their path and tried to order them back to the walls. They say Bywater was blistering them good and almost had him ready to turn when someone put an arrow through his neck. He didn't seem so fearsome then, so they dragged him off his horse and killed him.
Another dead to lay at Cersei's door.
My nephew, he said, Joffrey. Was he in any danger?
No more than some, and less than most.
Had he suffered any harm, taken a wound, mussed his hair, stubbed his toe, cracked a nail?
Not as I heard. I warned Cersei what would happen. Who commands the gold cloaks now?
Your lord father's given them to one of his westermen, some knight named Adam Marbrand.
In most cases, the gold cloaks would have resented having an outsider placed over them. But Sir Adam Marbrand was a shrewd choice. Like Jaime, he was the sort of man other men liked to follow. I have lost the city watch. I sent Pod looking for Shagar, but he's had no luck. The Stone Crows are still in the King's Wood. Shagar seems to have taken a fancy to the place. Timmit led the Burn men home with all the plunder they took from Stannis's camp after the fighting. Chella turned up with a dozen black ears at the river gate one morning, but your father's red cloaks chased them off while the Kingslanders threw dung and cheered. Ingrates, the black ears died for them. Whilst Tyrion lay drugged and dreaming, his own blood had pulled his claws out one by one.
I want you to go to my sister. Her precious son made it through the battle unscathed, so Cersei has no more need of a hostage. She swore to free Alayaya once.
She did. 8-9 days ago, after the whipping. Tyrion shoved himself up higher, ignoring the sudden stab of pain through his shoulder.
Whipping? They tied her to a post in the yard and scourged her, then shoved her out of the gate, naked and bloody.
She was learning to read, Tyrion thought absurdly. Across his face, the scar stretched tight, and for a moment it felt as though his head would burst with rage. Alayaya was a whore, true enough, but a sweeter, braver, more innocent girl he had seldom met. Tyrion had never touched her. She had been no more than a